The mics are on red. We're away.
Hello, welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 260 for some week in February 2011. This one's a little bit late. Sorry, guys, but here we are.
Howdy.
Hello. With me is Jim Race, of course, and I'm Jules Cheesek.
And that's the show. Thanks a lot for listening in, and we will...
Well done, well done.
No, we actually have got some very cool stuff for this week. I just did an interview with Mark Brax, Braxy, for short, and you guys will get to hear that. Very cool.
Those people who don't remember, a few years ago, Mark was the pit announcer for MotoGP,
yep.
The official feed with Nick Harris and when Matt Roberts was doing it. And then he went off and he started his own gig, which I'm sure you guys talked about, so... I won't spoil it.
And he's also done some work for Australian TV and has a new project coming out that you can hear about in the interview. And it looks like we'll be talking to him more as the season goes on, which is way cool because he's going to be off and about. He's got some very cool opinions on things, much like we do as well. So we all have opinions. What's that particular saying? Anyway. We also this week have a contest. Do you want to walk through that or shall I?
Sure. So basically, Moto Matters has a calendar that comes out every year, and they have graciously donated how many?
But we've got five to give away.
Five calendars to give away of Scott Jones's photography from around the world of MotoGP. And I already have my calendar. It's awesome. And we're going to give these away to... Basically, what we'll do is we're going to ask a question. And you guys write in answers to contest-2011calendar@motopodcast.com. And, of course, we'll have that in the show notes.
We have to because I looked at it. I'm like, if we didn't have it in the show notes, people would be going, what the hell was that?
And now we're going to get the first four people to answer, or we're going to wait until the next show and then just grab four from a hat of whoever got the answer right.
I think we should make it a timing thing.
Let's do it. All right. Yeah. So as soon as you hear this show, as soon as you hear this question, write in the answer if you know it. This is not an easy question, actually. It's a great question. Scott Jones came up with this one. It actually, should we even say what happened there? That was kind of funny.
You want to?
Sure.
Okay, well, I'll do it. He came up with a question, and the particular answer that he had, as it turned out, was slightly incorrect after we did some research. So it is still a difficult question, and it will make you have to reach back in your head. The emails that we get from the answer, we won't necessarily respond to you if you're incorrect, but if you are correct... we will write back to you and say, please send us your mailing address so we can do so. And what we'll do is we're going to do four this week, Jules, and we'll do one more next week because I want to come up with my own question. So we've got five calendars total, do four this week, and another question next week.
For I like show. It.
Yeah. You'll have a chance if you're not like right on it.
Cool. Good idea. Good idea.
So again, make sure you look in the show notes for the email address to send that to. There is a couple of other things that are going on.
Wait, are we going to ask a question?
Oh, no, we'll let them guess the question. Bad, I'm running away with it. I'm on fire, man.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and ask the question.
Go ahead.
All right. In modern Grand Prix racing, it seems incredible that the same rider might win races in different classes in the same season. This happened quite commonly, Jules, as you well know, back in the day. It still amazes me that it did. But the question is, one rider won races in all three of the 250, 350, and 500cc classes in the same season in four different seasons. Who was that rider?
Valentino Rossi! No, wait.
Yeah. You're ineligible. Yeah.
Think about it as well
as wrong.
Right. No. It's quite amazing. So we're not even going to give you any hints. So we'll just move on. That was the question, and you heard it. Get those emails sent.
Indeed, immediately. Do not dawdle. Pull over to the side of the road. Do not do it while you're driving. No driving. All right, that was funny. I almost forgot the question. That would have been a funny show, you bastards. Okay, so I have been doing this for a few years now, and I'm having a great time with it. And Martin was more than kind enough to get it set up this year for you, the listener. You know that we've had the Ride On Two tipping competition, which we will also have this year. Stand by for more information on that for next week. However, we're also going to be doing, for all the listeners out there in Motopod land, using the MCN Fantasy League, which is pretty cool. And the reason I like it is because it does MotoGP, World Superbike, and BSB. And Jules, you don't watch a lot of BSB, but you know that I do. And it's actually a very strategic way that you have to run this competition. You have to pay attention to an awful lot of things, not only the amount of money that you can spend on your teams, but what is going on during the particular periods. So we will be doing that. That's the MCN Fantasy League, and we will have a link in that as well in the show notes. And our PIN number, and write this down, or don't do it while you're driving again, but our PIN number is 1477. That's 1477. We've already got about 20 or 30 people in there at this point. We'd like to see as many of the listeners in and see if you guys can, in fact, David Emmett from Moto Matters is also in our same league. We've got a whole bunch of people, and we will match wits and or guesses about the various rounds. It's a lot of fun. I suggest you join in.
Very cool. Yeah. I'll play, even though, like you say, I don't follow the VSB. Not because I don't want to. It's just, you know, there's only so much time in my life.
I'm going to give away one hint as to how that you need to make your picks. Because this is actually the bottom line.
Valentino Rossi.
And it's been a great show this weekend. is that you need to be aware of what series run how many races on Sunday.
Ooh, yeah, it's true.
Very key.
Yep.
And I'll leave it at that.
Cool.
What else is going on? We're relatively popular on a particular social service, aren't we, Jules?
Yeah, we broke a number. That's right. We broke 5,000 fans on our official fan page on Facebook. It was a very cool, very, very cool.
And on top of that, now we can actually post as ourselves instead of...
Yeah, it's so nice. That's a nice feature that people have been asking about if you have a page of your own. Like, years we've been waiting for this feature. Anyway, what's really interesting is I love the... As admins, we get to see the breakdown of the users, and it's really... That's really interesting information. Like, the fan base is... really worldwide, which is we kind of knew that from our own previous metrics that we had, but this really kind of confirms it lines up. Maybe Italy's a little higher up there than we expected.
Yeah,
but you know, Italians love their motorcycle racing, so they probably, you know, like anything that has anything to do with MotoGP. So
and in fact that particular metric may actually become the foundation for the question that I might ask for next week's calendar.
Oh, very cool. Nice.
Yeah. Name the top 10 countries, and the person that comes the closest may win. In fact, that is going to be it.
Nah. Really?
Something like that. We'll see. Or languages or whatever. you never know. It would be hard, because the thing is that it being an English-based, you know, page that
and podcast
of course, you would be surprised, and that's enough hints right there. We'll see what I come up with. Martin pointed out to me, and I have watched the trailer, and it's very cool. There is a feature film that's coming out called I Superbiker, which in a way is kind of a goofy title thinking about it.
Yeah,
But it follows the fortunes of one Tommy Hill in the BSB series, also touching on James Ellison, Joss Brooks, Gary Mason. There is a premiere that's going to happen on the 10th of March, followed by a one-night showing about, and it is supposed to be pretty cool. There's going to be a fair amount of historical stuff. I know that Jack Bernicle and James Witham had done some of the commentary for it, as well as music by one of my absolute favorite bands of all the time, the Damned, Dave Vanian, who still owes me a pack of cigarettes from Burbank in 1979. Awesome. Well, both he and Captain Sensible stole a pack of my smokes. And there's going to be certain people out there going, okay, now we've pegged Jim as to how old he is and what he was doing in 1979. Yes, I am an ex-punk rocker. That might explain an awful lot of my bizarre proclivities. But you guys should check that out. I, Superbiker, coming to a film screen near you.
Most likely near you if you're in the UK. And hopefully... You know, out here in the California little motorcycle country, somebody's going to show it probably in Napa. There's a couple of theaters near Sears Point that used to show Faster. So,
I remember they showed it at an AFM race back when it first came out. And they actually broadcast it on a Saturday night onto the side of one of the buildings there, and it was very cool.
Yeah, I would check out your local track and see if anyone's showing it. Like, I'm sure big time motorcycle places like Barber and Miller are gonna have screenings. Looking forward to it.
All right, so that's it for the news. We will be talking shortly about testing, but let's roll right now the interview with Mark Brax, aka Braxy.
Sweet.
Hey, this is Jim Race for Motopod. I've got on the line with me Mark Brax, commonly known to everybody out there as Braxy. It's good to talk to him. I haven't seen you since last year at Laguna. How are you doing, Mark?
Good, Jim. Good. How is it over there with the cold weather? Are you keeping warm?
Actually, right now here in California, it's probably about 75 degrees out. We get to cheat. The East Coast is getting pounded.
Yeah, well, that's, I'd rather be on the West Coast anyway. From the memories of Monterey keep flooding back.
Yeah, it's always a good time at Laguna. I was curious about some of your thoughts about all the changes that have occurred lately, and I know that you are a massive race, obviously you're a massive race fan, but some of the changes we've had, people moving around teams and whatnot, probably specifically starting at the top, where in the past you have reported from pit lane, that being GP.
Yeah.
Give me your thoughts and impressions on what we might see this year. Based on the limited testing we've seen at Sepang, but still there's some big changes. And I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, it's probably the best thing that's happened to the sport in a while, a bit of a shake-up, because as you know, Jim, the fields have been pretty thin on the ground since they've gone to the 800s. And this being the last year of the 800s before they start going back to the 1000s, it's going to be interesting to see the development of the bikes and what they do to that to keep them going fast. But as we know, Rossi on the Ducati, that's that's a match made in heaven. I predicted that years ago. It was just, well, I think anybody did that had an idea that, Rossi being an Italian, ending up on an Italian motorcycle. He's like you said, Sepang wasn't a good indication because he had the shoulder injury and he was struggling with that. But, another couple of months off, the season starts in April, he'd be well fit by then. Having a team with him of Jerry Burgess and the rest of the boys there, mate, it can only help Nicky Hayden, which I hope it really does, because Nicky's been knocking on the door for a while and I really want to see him bounce around with Valentino. They get on really well together. And, I think that team's going to be really good to start with.
So do you think that Honda, though, is putting out the powerhouse move to try and catch the title since, as people say, Honda was one that was pushing for the 800s in the first place?
Yeah, well, I'm sure they want to be the last one to win the 800cc title, seeing they won, they won the last 990 and then they haven't been really seen since. But to tell you the truth, mate, that Repsol Honda pit's going to be the happiest garage in pit lane, isn't it, with the three happiest guys in the paddock, Casey Stoner, Danny and... Dobby. It's going to be, that could be the biggest problem, is that the team could self-destruct from the inside because of the, I want what he's got, and you know what I mean, he's not getting, I'm not getting what he's getting, and that type of thing. It's going to be interesting how Livia Supo, is the one that's going to be controlling it, because he's taking a bigger handle on what's going on as well. Libya Supo, as you might recall, used to be looking after Casey Stoner at Ducati, jumped ship to Honda at the beginning of last year as a marketing man, but now all of a sudden he's mysteriously, well, not mysteriously, he's turned up as a team manager, which we knew was going to happen anyway.
But, you know, it should be interesting to see if anything happens, because it looks like Alberto Puig has been kind of pushed to the quieter side of the garage.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just look after Danny, and I don't think he'll have as much influence now that Livio's in there as well, because Livio doesn't take any prisoners, and he knows exactly what he wants. He didn't get the Ducati to where it was with just fluking it all the way, did he?
Nope. All right, and so the Yamaha shufflings with Ben Spies up to the factory squad and Cal Crutchlow coming in from World Superbike, what do you think about that mix?
Renzo thought he had a hard time with Valentino. I think wait till Ben Spies gets a bit between his teeth, because he doesn't, well, you guys know well and truly over there the battle that him and Matt Mladen had over those years. And I think that's going to continue. And Ben, if anyone's going to win a championship soon, it's going to be him. We know how good he is, and he did last year on the performance of the Tectoire Yamaha. Now he's on the full factory bike. He won't need Lorenzo's settings, because they're two completely different styles of rider. There's no way that each settings would help the others, because Lorenzo's got that 250 style, 125, 250 style that he brought with him. And old Ben's adapted from the superbike, but he still rides it like a superbike. I think his arms actually give him aerodynamic benefits. I mean, the way he's got them flapping, right?
I think he's got to pull his elbows in a bit since his superbike days, just a tad.
Yeah, well, he's carrying on like Ruben's house, but even worse. But if it works for him, why not? And you said Cal Crutchlow. Don't know about Cal. Really good bloke, good mate and everything. But I don't know if he's going to make the step that quickly. Like, I suppose he's got big shoes to fill, hasn't he? Ben Spies coming in there, Rookie of the Year, and getting a couple of podiums in that last year. Cal, you know, he's didn't do too bad on the Yamaha, even though the Yamaha last year, Superbike that is, was a pig to ride in the last couple of years. So we'll just see how well he can adapt to it. But all the best for Cal, because he is a good bloke. But I think, you know, old Colin Edwards, he's still, mate, the evergreen Texan. He's just keeps on keeping on that bloke.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, because if you look at the spread of riders across the grid, we've still got some perennial veterans, if you will. You know, you go all the way down to, and I shouldn't put it that way, but you go down to the Pramac squad, the everlasting satellite Ducati team, and we've got a lot of Ducatis that are out there. You know, one person that sticks in my mind is Randy Depuniet, who was having a fantastic season last year until his very unfortunate running over by Mika Kallio, and now he's on a squad that you kind of wonder. I think the last best thing they did was with Alex Barros coming in third at Mugello, maybe. It makes you wonder when they can actually pull some results together, although I know that there's, you know, political stuff going on within the Ducati squads, but I'm kind of waiting.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, but I think they'll also be an also-ran. It just depends how much Ducati's willing to give them and keep them up the top. And when you mention Randy, he's got Loris Caparossi as a teammate. Like, that's like the prodigal son returning in a way to Ducati, albeit not on the factory team. But he left there at the end of 06 to go to Suzuki. End of 06 he left Ducati. End of 07. But it's going to be interesting what service Ducati give to Caparossi, because when Loris left Ducati, and even up until last year talking to him, you mentioned the word Ducati, and it's just this diatribe of abuse comes out of his mouth. All aimed at the electronics of the bike and how difficult it was for a 250-style rider like himself to actually get the thing to work, because he just could never get faith in the electronics of this. You know, it was all different from one lap to the next. So hopefully they've sorted that out. Randy's still got a bit of a thigh in his belly, especially when he's got a Playboy centrefold as his girlfriend. That's always a good help to keep you motivated, just in case there's any other guys come supposedly sniffing around your pit box.
that's if Lucio lets her go from whatever contract she might have.
Yeah, that's true. I think she'll be ducking and weaving out of there somehow. But Lauren's a really, really nice lady, and they've actually been staying down in Sydney here in the off-season, her and Randy. They've got a place down on the northern beaches. And I think Lauren's trying to talk Randy into buying a place down here.
Ah, well, wise woman, wise woman. I was kind of joking that when he went to Pramac, since he wasn't at was no longer at LCR, if he would be able to carry the relationship forward. So I'm glad that that's sticking together.
Yeah, I think they're a pretty good match, even though Lauren's about 18 foot tall and, you know, Andy's knee eye to his side stand, so to speak. But, they're a good pair in the paddock, but no, it's good. But yeah, the Pramac thing should be all right. The other one on the Ducati that I'm interested in this year and his second year in it is Hector Barbara on the Paginus Amaryllis, the Yellow Pages bike. That's going to be... He did well last year. You know, he was knocking on the door of the top 10 a lot of the times. And I think a year under the belt, you know, he's got the rookie year out of the way and he's adapted to that. And I think we might see the old Hector from the 250 days, that barging elbows out, get out of my way, I'm going to knock you off attitude that he'll try and upset a few of the others now that he's got a bit of confidence on the bike.
You know, I'm consistently surprised at how Aspar can put together these teams and get the sponsorship needed and pull them together enough in the various categories. They do it year after year. It's amazing.
Well, I think in Spain, he's the second most popular person behind the king somehow. He's just, he's a living legend over there, knowing all those world championships he had in the 80s and the 125s and even in the back in the 50cc days. I think he started in that. But he is a living legend in the place in Spain, and he's just got to put his hand up and people are willing to give him money. And as you can see with the amount of, there's not much room on the fairings to put any more sponsors. Plus, Jim, when you look at it, he's got the Paginus Amaryllis in the first grade, then he's got the Bankaha in the second grade and third grade and everything. He just keeps coming up with them. And, you know, yes. Spain is just it's manic when it comes to motorcycle racing.
Absolutely. Well, and for good reason, if you think about it, because they are putting together consistently guys that finish on the top and on the top at the end of the season. It's kind of a battle between Spain and Italy. How about the Silver Spoon child, if you will, Carol Abraham?
Yeah, Silver Spoon. Wouldn't it be good to have that in your backyard, Bruno Racetrack? yeah, it's good to have an old man. You can't help for what you're born with, and good luck to Carol. He's a good kid. He's actually matured a lot, talking to him last year at the Australian Grand Prix. He's jumping off that 600, the Moto2 bikes, and he was just saying, there's not any power to them, which is understandable, coming off a 250 GP weapon onto a 120 horsepower production-based 600. He wants to get on this basically the GP bike and see what can be done. But I'm sure he's going to, he'll get that feeling that, this is going to hurt as he gets flung over the bars a couple of times in the early days.
It will be interesting to see what Ducati can bring to the table. Not only obviously for the factory team this year, because clearly there's some things that they want to do and need to do if they want to capture the final championship in the 800s, unless, of course, they carry the 800 forward into 2012. But it will be fun to see what they can bring out, not only for the factory team, but as well for the satellite teams. One other person I wanted to talk about very briefly, recent Moto2 graduate, if you will, reintroducing himself to the MotoGP class and also rode for Pramac in the past, Tony Elias.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting with him. He's another one that's matured. Like, he's only still about 27. You know, they've been around forever. You think they're about 40, but he was determined. He was very disappointed to get the flip from MotoGP, as I suppose anybody is done from the premier class. But he's answered the critics. He's come back and won the 600 title, or Moto2, whatever you want to call it. And that's probably the best place he could do it, because being in that production-based championship, you know, your riding talent really comes to the fore when everybody's basically on the same bit of equipment. And he's done that. But I still don't know if, you know, when he went to the MotoGP the first time, he was close, but he never got the cigar. And I still reckon he's still going to be in the cigar shop looking for the one with his name on it this year somehow.
Yeah. You know, I think the Flaminis, if they heard that particular conversation, you calling it a production-based championship, might be having a little bit of a fit right now.
Yeah, well, it is. You've got to admit that it is. They've got the engines. That, you know, the GA Tech that look after all the engines from Honda, sure, they've got the chassis and everything, but in a couple of years, Jim, you know, there's going to be a favourite chassis that everybody wants to go to, whether it's a Suda, whether it's the Morawaki, whether it's even the MZ. The MZ's supposed to, you know, be a brand new bike this year. Anthony West is stoked in the way that's performing. So you're going to have the engines, and I don't care what anybody says. I'll talk to Paolo in a couple of weeks down at Phillip while I'm down there next weekend for the superbike testing. So it's going to be interesting what happens in the future with Moto2 with superbikes as well, because superbikes are they're getting close to being the category that everybody wants to look at.
In a way, yeah. Well, the one thing that everybody wants is close racing and, you know, people finishing elbow to elbow on the final lap. We just had a finishing up of some tests today. We just had some finishing up of testing at Valencia for Moto2 and the GP125 kids. And, you know, if there's one person that stands out to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people out there, somebody that came up from the 125 ranks, that being Marc Márquez. The kids, it is a dynamo. And yet another Spaniard.
Yeah, he's. I'll put him in the same category as Rossi. I know that's a big, you know, there's big shoes there, but there's always one that's going to come along. And Márquez is one that's, well, he's only a youngster. He decimated the 125s this year in his first year really in it. And I think he's going to be one of those ones that does the Rossi. Maybe take a year to learn the Moto2, then win it, and move on to the MotoGP class and give him a bit of a hurry up. Because, unfortunately, as much as we love the boy, Valentino Rossi's only got a few more years left in this class at the most. And just going back to that, Jim, I wanted to say with Nicky and Valentino on the same team, people might think there's a bit of friction, but the amount of respect they've got for each other. It's one point stands out at the Aussie GP last year at Phillip Island when Nicky missed out on that podium by, well, what do you say, a bee's dick, so to speak, getting across the line with that battle with Valentino Rossi. I went and interviewed him after the race. He was still a leathers on in the pit box and everything, doing a pit commentary for the track down there. And he was actually in tears. There was tears rolling down his face, and I had a lump in the throat because he just left nothing on the track. He wanted that hard to beat Rossi, and he couldn't do it. You know, when Rossi on the Yamaha, you know, the Ducati, welcome to the new team, son, and everything. I've never seen a guy so emotional. You know, Nicky wears his heart on his sleeve, but I was nearly crying talking to him. And I went up to Valentino after that and told him what Nicky did. And Valentino just dropped everything, went straight into the pit box, give him a big hug, made sure everything was okay. And, you know, mate, just to see that, if you didn't get a lump in your throat by looking at those two, you didn't have a pulse. It was something special, and it just shows the respect those two have got for each other. And it'll really, just for the Americans over there, I think it's really going to help Nicky really kick some ass this year, and I really hope he does, because it's been too long since we've seen him at the top of the pile.
That's very cool. You know, I always saw that they got along brilliantly and there was not a frictional moment. Part of that may have been because for a time, Valentino did not necessarily consider him that competitor that you had to hate in order to beat, even if it was, you know, subtle. But having him back, it's very clear that you can just gather from the looks on their faces and, you know, all the stuff from the Vroom event in Italy, the classic opening that Ducati does for its riders. You could just see that, you know, there's some love there.
Oh, yeah, there's a heap there. And it's going to be with Jerry Burgess coming through with Briggsy and the rest of the crew of the Aussie Kiwis and the Belgian connection with Bernard and everything. You know, they're all criticising Rossi now for his shoulder. Not criticising, but wondering if he's going to be fit or anything. But, you know, Rossi is, well, what do you say? He can play the game better than anybody. And he jumped off the Honda onto the Yamaha and won the race, you know, from Honda, the first time ever to do that. What's to say with that brains trust that you got in that Ducati pit now that Rossi comes out and wins the first race under lights at Qatar? You know, you see what Stoner's done at Qatar in the last couple of years in that Ducati. It's him and their machine going around there. So, and the Honda's struggled around there a bit. So it's going to be interesting with Rossi. Burgess knowing the track backwards. He's been there on the variety of different machines over the years. There's all the data there, that little black book of Jerry Burgess's. You know, it might be a Ducati, but it's still got two wheels, an engine and a set of handlebars. So everything's pretty well works the same. So, you know, I reckon Rossi is going to have a bloody good year this year. And he's going to, you know, the old foot and mouth disease for a few journos. I think they might be eating their socks before about the third or fourth round.
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah. You know, it's incredibly difficult to, and I'm always like this. I really try hard not to pre-predict because you can't really tell what's going to happen with a season until, frankly, race one. You know, we used to have what I term race zero, which was in Jerez, and we kind of would have an idea. But now I don't think there's really any way to tell. And in fact, frankly, Qatar is not a valid measuring stick for the rest of the season because it's a night race and You know,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's always one that's, as you said, the season really starts when they get to Spain for the first round. There's 150,000 screaming, Latinos, Spanish and Italian just going ballistic at that southern track down there in Andalusia. And I think, the cream's going to rise to the top. There's no denying that. You can count the six riders that are going to be there. But the consistency, and like we said before, that if the friction in the Honda camp gets big, you've got three very intense personalities there that are not happy unless they're winning. And believe it or not, the most relaxed out of the three, no matter how it comes across in the press, is Pedrosa. He's always the ones that seems a bit more relaxed. But then Dovizioso, last year after Phillip Island, where he retired, and was because the steering damper come loose and he couldn't steer the bike, it was just shaking itself to bits. Seemingly done up with a wig and a few other things on during the after party, it showed the guy's got a bit of a sense of humour too. As he's gone out, kicked his heels up, Danny's gone out and kicked his heels up. Casey Stone has won the race and he's not to be seen anywhere. So, it's going to be interesting, that one.
It's always kind of funny who shows up at the after parties, isn't it?
Yeah, and it really give me an insight into Dovizioso, because at the track he's got the blinkers on, he's intense, you can hardly get a word out of him. But seeing him out that night, and I thought he would have still had the shits from the bike, he was in a good position at Phillip Island on the Honda and everything. But he's going, well, it wasn't my fault. And one of the team guys come up to him, give him hugs and said, mate, we're so effing sorry that happened. And it was, whereas other guys have got the chip on the shoulder and then they just run off and hide in a corner and sulk, not mentioning any names.
Hey, let me turn the corner here for a moment, because I do want to ask you about something that was in the news, if a little bit peripheral, and I'm not sure how much of it was bluff and bluster, but Dorna pushing PI to allow them to change the race date and potentially, at least from the news, threatening that they would pull the sanctioning, or not sanctioning, but necessarily, but the track from the series if they didn't do it. Is that spin or is that true? What do you think?
More spin than logic, to tell you the truth, because it has been mooted for a while. But Phillip Island is that sort of track. If it was in the middle of Queensland, at this time of the year, it'd be flooded. Who knows? But yeah. down at Victoria, it's the first next stop from Phillip Island is Antarctica, basically. So
yeah. You're
open to the elements. And where that happened, like the next weekend after Phillip Island last year, it was perfect sunshine, 25 degrees. I've actually been talking, not saying they took my word for it, but saying for years that they should have the GP, because down here we've got the Superbikes at the end of February, World Superbikes, and also the Australian Formula One Grand Prix in the middle of March.
Right.
And my argument, or my proposal, my thoughts for a number of years was to put the GP in the middle so you can get three weekends over like a two-week period, three weekends have a speed festival. And you'd cross, you'd do such a crossover for people that, maybe not go to the superbikes and MotoGP, and others to go to MotoGP and the Formula One, and others from Formula One to go, oh, the GP's at Phillip Island the week before, we'll go to that as well. And I think the interest for the punters to have three premier class events like that in three weekends, that's a two weeks break, really, that you could spread it out over. And, mate, that'd be just for the economy, for everything. The weather would probably be better. I'll tell you next week when we get to Phillip Island, it might be flogging down rain for the test next week. Who knows? Responding more to the reaction of Rossi, and it's a short memory, but when we got to the race, it was dry. It was a perfect sunshine on the Sunday. It was only that Friday that was absolutely brutal. That's the only way I can put to it. Working in pit lane, a wind chill factor of about 3 degrees, blowing horizontal, so to speak. It was freezing. It was wet. I've been down there in December, Jim, and the same thing's happened. So it does. Phillip Island is one of those circuits. If you're going to guarantee weather like that, you'd have to move it to the tropics. But look what happens at Sepang every year. But no one says they want to move it from there when I've been there a couple of times and qualifying's been abandoned because the track's flooded. So, and that happened this year when they left Phillip Island to go to, I think it was Estoril. There was 3 days of torrential rain there, but no one said get rid of the, move the track there. No, it's just the nature of the beast being at Phillip Island.
Well, yeah, and frankly, there's not a whole lot you can do about Mother Nature. I mean, who would have ever thought that we would end up with a race being postponed at Qatar in the middle of the desert? Seriously.
Yeah, exactly. And with this so-called climate change that I'm fully, I don't support. I think it's just Mother Nature going through a thing at the moment with their 1,000-year cycles and everything. we're going to get bizarre weather patterns. Look at what's happening in America now. You're saying it's beautiful sunshine in California, but you go east and you've got snowstorms of 6 foot snowdrifts everywhere. Australia, where I'm living, we're basically in bushfire warnings.
Not to mention in Queensland, you've got typhoons coming through.
Yeah, and it's mate, it's been incomprehensible, the weather down here. But what do you do? You just got to plod on and go, you know, head down and ass up, so to speak.
Very true.
I think they will change the date to bring it back to February or March, which I think will get. The only trouble is the Grand Prix Corporation, who looks after the MotoGP and Formula One, and have to do two events within the space of a couple of weeks. But hey, mate, get them working. They've got a whole year to get it all organized.
True. You know, I agree with you. Having kind of a speed festival thing, there's been a little bit of a push for that from the fans a little bit here to have the, and also from a logistics and financial standpoint, to have the Laguna Seca event and the Indy event closer together, perhaps on consecutive weekends. But at the same time, it's difficult for some fans, and the worry is that they may not be able to get, you know, that consecutive period off in order to attend, and it might actually drain on one or other of the runs. And so I have to wonder.
Well, there's a plus and a minus for both of that. But even talking to some friends over there last year about it, because and for the logistics of getting over there for riders and teams, it's a month apart. It's just a logistical nightmare to get over there. Yeah. And a few of my friends have said, well, if that was next weekend or maybe 2 weekends later, they'd work it out that they'd take their holidays in, because it is in the middle of your summer over there. July, it's the best time to have off. Mm-hmm. July, August, Indy 1 week or whatever, Laguna a couple of weeks later. You know, it's just, it's waiting to happen, I think, I reckon. And you look at the catchment area of motorcyclists in America. It's the biggest market in the world for a lot of the manufacturers. So if they were going to do it twice, and I haven't been to Indy. I've been to Monterey a few times, as you know, but has Indy got the atmosphere, or is it just too big to be hosting a motorcycle race when you consider that the Indy 500, when you, 200,000 people in the stand?
It's a lot different, Mark. It's so Laguna Seca kind of has the entire area with, you know, Cannery Row and all that. There's no doubt that Indy puts on a fantastic show, and specifically Indianapolis Motor Speedway has an extremely efficient and very perfected way of putting on the race and bringing in fans. And the nice thing is the infield for that place, because it is so huge, can almost seem like a little city for the weekend. Whereas you well know at Laguna Seca, it feels like you're crammed into the head of a pin.
Yeah.
It's markedly different and actually completely different experience, but I highly encourage you to try and make it this year to Indy. This is their last contracted year so far. I hope they pick it up again. There are people that say that the track itself is not very enticing, and I've talked to the riders, and some of them like it, some of them don't. But I would go there if I were you just for the experience.
Well, I've always wanted. It's like an icon of motor racing. I know we all love two wheels, but I was brought up on four wheels, and Indy 500 was part of the growing up process for me. So I'd love to get over there and see what it's like to be at a Grand Prix in America without those hot desert winds coming and attacking you.
Not to mention, you know, sitting on dirt and...
Yeah, true. It is a bit rustic, the old Laguna Seca, but I think that's what adds to the atmosphere. Could you imagine having a grandstand at the Corkscrew? It just wouldn't be the same.
Very true. Very true. You know, but Indy is one of those. I've been for 2 years, and I've actually not even visited, even walked down to the far end of the circuit. It is that huge. You get inside there, and it's just astounding and amazing how massive the place is. And from a journo's perspective, they do you very well. Really good food. Oh, man, let me tell you.
That's the most important thing, what they serve up for lunch.
It's fantastic. You come for that alone. Very, very good people there. Listen, I'm kind of curious, because we know you, the general world knows you as a pit lane reporter in the past for Dorna, I believe, in other outlets. I know that you probably still do it for Australian TV. Is that the case?
Yeah, I've been doing a bit of that, TV, the racetracks themselves and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'll be going down the superbikes again next week to do that. But I've also been working on a website as well, so making my own well, I suppose you know what it's like being a freelancer, Jim. You've got to make your own work sometimes. So I've been putting together a website for the last couple of years.
And I've heard about that. We've talked about it, and it sounds way cool. Fill us in.
Well, it's basically using the contacts through all the riders from MotoGP, World Superbikes, British, American, Aussie, real road racing, all the way through. It's basically, I suppose, I don't know if I could say it, but it's something like a tube for riders, if that makes any sense, without getting into the legalities of it all. But all the riders will be supplying me video blogs I've done on their mobile phones. And I've got journalists doing their bit at the front, and with photographers selling photos, and just riders from... I've got Troy Corser, Colin Edwards on the site, Randy Lapunier, Ben Bostrom, Mark Miller. Oh, the list goes on and on. I've got about 30 or 40 riders at the moment. But there is a bit of a catch. You've got to pay $49.95 for the year, which is less than a dollar a week, I suppose. So, but I reckon if you've got the best riders in the world giving their thoughts without any press, what do you call it, pressmen giving them little tips about what they can and cannot say, it's going to take a while, but I think this is, so the riders are really inspired by it. It's yeah, it's going to take a while, but February the 23rd is the official launch down at Phillip Island, so hopefully I'm onto something.
Cool, very cool. We'll make sure to pass on additional information when you get close, and I look forward to hearing that with your particular spin, because you're one of those people that I've always admired and kind of tried to match my humor or a way of bringing things about with you.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Well, at least someone's listening. You don't know who listens when you're a professional dribbler.
Yeah, isn't it funny, because you'll sit here and you'll do all this talking and you'll kind of feel like you pulled something off and you've done a good job, and then you're like, is anybody out there fucking listening to me?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a big hollow black hole in cyberspace, or whatever they call it.
Well, the lucky thing is that we get an awful lot of feedback here for Motopod through email, through the Facebook fan page. And so I pretty much hear immediately after a show is out if I've put my foot in my mouth or I've done a good job. And I know that you're catching up on this whole social media thing at this point, where you're kind of figuring it out. And I'm serious. I give you props for it. The next thing you're going to have to do, Braxy, is open a Twitter account, and then you'll really be drowning in it.
Well, I've got one. It's just a matter of trying to get it all sorted. I've got the Twitter, the Facebook, and now the website. We're going to have all the links going in and trying to get it an iApp. But, gee, yeah. I tell you what, iApps aren't cheap, that's for sure.
No.
To get them up and running, you think, no wonder Apple's Apple and we're down here at the bottom of the pile.
Go Droid, Mark. I'll explain it to you later.
Oh, it might be.
Yeah. All right. So the name of the site is going to be motoraceface.com. Is that correct?
That's it. Face to face with those who race.
Right on. And I look forward to seeing that. And I thank you for taking the time to talk with us. And I hope I see you at either, well, hell, I'll be at, where am I going to be this year? I'm going to be at Indy. I'll be at Laguna. I'll be at the TT. And I think I might make Silverstone, though that's looking kind of iffy this year.
Well, you could be really unlucky. It sounds like you might catch up with me.
I'll buy the first round, Mark.
Sounds good to me, Mark.
Cheers.
Cheers, Jim. Thanks a lot. See you guys. See you, viewers, listeners.
All right. So rolling back in, and very many thanks to Braxy. Appreciate that. And we'll certainly be working with him more in the future. And I'm really looking forward to that, especially getting some information from him on the upcoming opener for World Superbike at PI. Now, what do we got, Jules?
Well, we've finally done with the Sepang test. We really didn't talk that much about it the last show, but now it's been kind of all the results sink in. There have been interviews with people that, where they talked about what they were working on. So there's a lot more clarity, I think, to what these results, you know, why they're not so meaningful, but in some ways, and in some other ways, they are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, preseason testing at this point certainly doesn't mean a whole lot. Although we don't have the old GP0 to gather some meaningful data on, it still does give us kind of an idea as to where people are going and who's struggling and who's not. And it's pretty clear to me that
There is a good chance that Honda is going to come out screaming this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Honda's looking good and Ducati is not looking good. So that's pretty much the way to summarize what I've seen, right?
Yeah,
in terms of the actual results. Mm-hmm. The conversations that especially Repsol has been extremely nice about releasing full interviews of their three riders about the bikes, and it does seem like they were working with very specific pieces, like the clutch and mm-hmm. but in general the response from all three riders has been very positive, that the bike has definitely continued on the same progress that we saw towards the end of last season. So I think Honda is going to be definitely a very serious contender. Valentino Rossi is, of course, saying that Yamaha is probably going to be a tricky one as well. And we'll see what Ducati can pull out of the bag before the season starts. I know I hate to, not talk about Suzuki, but they're in the middle of who knows what's going to happen with those guys.
True, but since you say Suzuki, there's something that's on the horizon that's actually interesting and weird in a sort of way. We all know that John Hopkins is going to BSB this year. We'll be working with Paul Denny again, which surprises a lot of people. But at the same time, he is definitely going to be attending the Qatar MotoGP round as a test rider. Why is he doing that? Well, because they say he's going to be a potential substitute for Alvaro Bautista. But that whole thing is just weird.
It is. It's kind of there was some mention that he may wildcard.
He is wildcarding at what they call the European round, which is known as I think the round they run it either. I think it's the Silverstone round.
Okay.
But he's definitely going to be doing that. But it's surprising to everybody, in a way, because he was out of Suzuki into Kawasaki, which we know didn't quite work out. The big question is, can John maintain his health? And that's something that you've got no idea. I mean, he's certain, there's no doubt that he got battered and beaten over the last 4 or 5 seasons. And he struggled, period. And so it's all about not only physical, but mental health, keeping himself together, putting together a good string of results. And if he does well, perhaps seeing him back on either Suzuki, if something happens to Alvaro, or potentially a more common use of a second bike. But yeah, who knows? Who knows? Mm-hmm. I'm kind of baffled by the whole thing, and I suppose I should probably try and get in touch with Paul and see.
Which part of it baffles you the most?
The fact that they're back together again, not only in BSB, but considering a rerun of the MotoGP win.
Yeah, I felt at the time when he left Suzuki that it wasn't exactly a happy separation.
So, I agree.
That's why I agree. I totally agree that was the biggest surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, wishing him well, because he's one of those guys who I think had tremendous unrealized potential.
Yeah, and if you go all the way back to, you'd have to reach back way to when Kenny Roberts Jr. won the title. In 2000, I'm sorry, still on the two strokes back then, that he by far has been the most successful rider, albeit a little bit patchwork, but
on the Suzuki.
Yeah, on the Suzuki, correct.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. All right, so the results, let's just run down your top 10 from Sepang. Again, once again, this is very preliminary, early information that we have coming out, and it really doesn't amount to more than a small hill of beans. But that being said, I think we should run down the numbers, and some of them are surprising. Number one, Marco Simoncelli, he of the non-aerodynamic hairstyle. Number two, Danny Pedrosa. Strangely, a relatively absent Alberto Puig, as far as the testing goes. We did see him once or twice. Number three, Casey Stoner, fast, out of the box, and certainly a threat for 2011. Number four, Jorge Lorenzo on the Yamaha Factory Racing Team. Number five, Dovi. That Honda team will be an interesting story. Number six, Ben Spies, also on the Factory Yamaha squad. him being very, very methodical. I think a big surprise for everybody was number 7, Hiroshi Ayama, on the San Carlo Hanagrassini. And he stayed at the top of the pops for a while there in the beginning. And I'm very impressed with that. I hope that he can keep up that momentum. The first Ducati that we have, number 8, Nicky Hayden for the Ducati Marlboro team. At number 9, Colin Edwards on the Monster Yamaha Tech 3. And in 10th, and who knows if that is a harbinger of things to come, would be Alvaro Bautista on the Rizzo Suzuki. All the way down at the bottom. And I want to worm my way up a bit here. And this was over 3 days of testing, so they had a fair amount of track time. Was Tony Elias. And I think that that might worry Lucio a little bit. He was a good 2.2 seconds off the pace. That is a long way back. The question is, can he maintain his, you know, his attitude and whatnot that he brought forward from his Moto2 championship last year? And
I mean, the disparity between him and the other Hondas is what is really was striking.
Sure. And we know that LCR bike is no, you know, it's no snail.
No, exactly. That. Exactly. Although, does Hiroshi also have factory equipment?
Nope.
So nope. It's just Simoncelli.
Just Marco.
So Simoncelli, Pedrosa, Stoner, and Dovizioso have the factory bike. Hiroshi has the satellite bike, and so does Tony Elias.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so anyway, but he did, I mean, he made, you know, pretty vast improvement, I think, over, so let's see, like, 1.3 seconds between session 1 and 3.
Right.
So Tony, you know, he's the only one out of that entire group of Honda riders who hasn't actually ridden a Honda last year. So, I mean, a MotoGP bike.
True.
So,
true.
So, I like, you know, we'll see when, I mean, we'll see in Qatar.
Exactly.
Race 1.
And it is nice kind of that the, much like World Superbike, the test prior to Qatar is going to be held at the same place that the first race is. That is when you can tell.
Yes, yes. Unless someone is really truly sandbagging at that point.
Which is ballsy if you think about it.
Yeah.
Second from the bottom is Kyle Crutchlow, and he was pretty vocal about what his thoughts were, and he had basically attributed it to himself. That being, he's having some difficulty in learning what the braking thresholds are and actually being able to, I believe a term that he used, or probably paraphrasing, was the razor edge aspect that is a GP bike compared to a super bike. So I would not all be surprised if he rose quickly through the ranks. We'll have to see how that goes. Carol Abraham next down at the bottom, followed by, and we're going bottom up, Randy Dipugnier, Loris Caparossi, Hector Barbera, and a name that we didn't expect, although maybe we should have, which would be Valentino Rossi in 11th place. And we know that his shoulder is still nagging problems, if you will. We figure hopefully by, what is it, April the 1st race, that he will be ready and good to go. And we'll have to see how that goes. You know, it's also a matter of molding the Ducati to him. Not necessarily the other way around, because clearly he's going to have a serious say in what that bike becomes, whether or not that translates over to something that works with Nicky or they have non-parallel tracking is soon to be seen.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to follow because, you know, they don't want to sabotage their entire Ducati effort. I mean, they have so many bikes out there.
Exactly.
And yet it's the doctor, right? So they're going, and it's the dream. It's like the triumvirate, you know, they have to make that work. So we'll see how far they're willing to take it. You know, one thing I wanted to point out was that the three rookies, you know, Carol and Cal and Tony, I guess Tony's not really a rookie by rules, but he hasn't raced for an entire season on the GP bikes. So I'm not surprised to see those guys towards the bottom. They're figuring out the machines, basically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, that's that whole slew of Ducatis. You know, they're obviously working on stuff. One of the interesting things that Rossi said was, it's actually not surprising. It's surprising to me that it surprised him enough to actually say, hey, this bike behaves kind of like a 500, you know, two-stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I don't think it really actually surprises people who have been watching Casey Stoner on that bike, because that thing looks beastly, you know? Very, very...
aggressive.
Aggressive, raw, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, Stoner's been, in his interviews, has been praising the smoothness of the Honda. He can't believe how smooth it is. There's some issues with braking, some issues with clutch that causes some chatter that both him and the Vizioso spoke about. But in general, he just can't stop praising the bike. Of course, that's kind of what you do to play the game. You know, you're on the new team. But Stoner is not a guy who really plays the game. So when he says...
Think about this, Jules. Yeah. So who was the fastest guy at the post-Valencia test last year? It was Casey. He stepped right off of the Ducati, went on to Honda, and smoked everybody.
Yep.
So at that point, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
next year, maybe...
I think, in fact, that was much more telling than the session one of Sepang.
I agree, because you know now that they're making these subtle changes to try and wrap the bike around the riders. Well, when you can step off of a race bike that is capable of winning races and step onto one that you haven't even sniffed around for, 3 or 4 years, and you know that clearly the RC211V is quite different to the one that he had back in the day when he was running it up for LCR.
But that was a 990.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's completely different.
Yeah.
Different tires, everything.
Yeah. And so certainly as a person to be reckoned with, the question is, can they maintain that momentum?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But I think, so my point was kind of that I think that may actually play in favor if it's true that the Ducati really is such an aggressive machine, because, you know, if anyone can tame a bike, it's going to be Rossi. Mm-hmm. And he may take advantage of some of those things the way I think Stoner did, you know.
True.
So we'll see how it goes. You know, again, we'll see for sure in Qatar when the lights go off.
Yeah, and the clock is ticking at this point. There's times when I'm overwhelmed with the amount of information, just trying to sort of package it in my head. It's fun, and at the same time, you're like, you know, you try and put yourself mentally into the place of the participants, and sometimes it's really difficult, and especially obviously not being there and not being on the ground and be able to talk to these people face to face. But I think this may be the best year ever.
definitely, it has the most question marks.
Okay.
We haven't had this many question marks in a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly in GP, no doubt.
Yep.
All right. Do you want to talk about just a little bit of Moto2 here?
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
On the same Repsol front, they've been very, very good about passing along information about their Moto2 squad. Tons and tons of stuff, and certainly there's no doubt that Marc Marquez, who blazed his way through the 125 GP class last year and has stepped onto a Moto2 bike, Suter chassis this year, is kicking some butt, and it's fun to see. And wait till you hear the interview with Braxi, because we had some good conversation about this very briefly. But I think the kid's going to be a force this year. And I can actually
see. And the year after that, and the year after that. You know?
Yeah. And moving his way up, I would not at all be surprised to see him in the MotoGP ranks for too long.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely a talent. So he and Scott Redding shared the top spot of the Valencia test.
Right. And there was also a prior test that at Montmelo. But, there's been a whole bunch of testing going on right now. And, you know, it might be a real interesting question to ask. And in fact, this would probably be one of the most challenging tipping pools to do, is pick your top three for Moto2 for 2011. Actually, just a thought, because Moto2, I think, is probably one of the most difficult ones to predict. If I had to look back at 2010, as to who I would have predicted, I think I would have had much different outcomes. Although
I think we would have all picked Tony Elias, though.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, he was really, I was like, you know, it's who's going to be going for second, you know?
True. Well, we didn't know it was going to be the axe murderer class right off the bat.
No, I mean, the actual results of the racing were completely shockingly surprising, but but in the end, he did capture the crown, which everybody tipped him to do. You know,
that's true. That's true. Well, this year should be another barn burner. There is sort of whispers that for 2012, some things are going to change with the engine rules, which would be kind of cool.
Is that when the Honda contract runs out?
I believe so.
Yeah. Cool, cool, cool.
Whether or not they go to something that is more prototype would be very interesting to look at. I think they should perhaps simplify it, but at least allow the capability to have some innovation and redesign of what these 600cc engines are. But we'll see. Yep. Anyway, your top five from, and I'll just zip through these, your top five from Valencia were, and I think this is, hopefully these are conglomerate times. I'm not sure, they may just be the final team, but was Marc Marquez, Scott Redding, Julian Simon, Yuki Takahashi, and Tomas Luthi. Running down through a few more, Stefan Bradl, Andrea Iannone, Alex Espargaro, and Alex De Angelis. There were more and more, and we always know that that is a very large field.
And just to put this in perspective, we haven't even gotten to a second.
Exactly.
First and ninth guy. So,
yeah,
they're very close. Just as expected.
Yep. There's no doubt that this year is going to be tight as well. It looks like these Suter chassis are still up at the top. We do have the Morawaki and the Calyx and a few other things up there. FTR are still in the mix and Tech 3 as well. So we're going to, you know, the chassis is the modifying factor, frankly, in Moto 2. And it still has been, and it will be until we have a change in the engine configuration rules. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Cool. Well, let's do 125s really quick. They had their test in Valencia as well. They basically follow the same schedule as Moto 2.
For the most part, yeah.
And Nicol Tirol was on the top of the sheets there.
And the person with perhaps the coolest name about, at least for motorcycle road racing, and to be honest, this name had not come up on my radar before. The first name I can easily pronounce, the last one probably butcher, but it would be a Maverick Vinales,
yeah.
And those of you out there in Motopod land that say that I butchered that, please send it in to me and I'll let you know. I appreciate a little bit of point on the pronunciation. Hector Faubel, Miguel Oliveira, and Alberto Montoya were your top five.
Cool. Yeah, Nicol Tirol he was such a amazing force last year that I think he's going to be definitely a championship contender this year, as long as he still stays healthy and keeps on doing what he's doing.
Yep. And he is with the only team that is fielding bikes in every class.
Right. That's right. Espar now has bikes in every single class,
which is way cool. And I talked to Braxy about this. I'm like, it's amazing how he's able to maintain that type of sponsorship across this large spectrum and have been doing so for many years. They've been going all the way back to the 50cc days. It's just,
yeah, it's pretty incredible, and it feeds back well because his guys do well.
Not only that, and they graduate.
And they graduate, exactly.
Yeah. So, good on him. That's also the same folks that have, you know, they put together all sorts of people who've gone on to be world champions. So, very, very cool. We did have, shifting gears now, unless you've got something else from the GP World, Jules.
Well, I guess the only thing from the GP World that is still kind of, it's probably one of the bigger question marks is the sponsorship situation at the factory team at Yamaha. They still have not announced a series sponsor. So we'll see how that goes. It might just be Yamaha factory.
Yeah, they are doing a livery unveiling, I believe, soon.
Yep. I think before the next test.
The question being, whose name will be on that?
Right.
Clearly, they're going to have, they already have some sub-sponsors locked down. The question being is who they will have.
As a title sponsor.
As a title sponsor, if they have one. We don't know. But, you know.
Yamaha Pianos. That'd
be cool. maybe they'll bring Tozen over and do some crash stuff. Damn, I did that again, didn't I? Wait, no, he's riding a BMW now, so I'm not sure that he could.
That's true. That's true. He can't
change his personal livery.
Thank God.
And speaking of BMWs and James Toseland, the World Superbike folks have gone through their own personal testing schedule. There's actually been a fair amount of smaller tests where some teams have been at this track, that track. But the big test, sort of the first one that we had, was World Superbike running at Portimao, as well as World Supersport at the same test. And that was a bit ago. That was back late January. So, you know, we're stretching back a bit here. And by now, those of you that have been following it have probably got a good idea. But the man at the top of that was one Jakob Smerts. And perhaps the best pole winner.
Yeah.
Over the last few years, the question is, can he maintain it? And actually, this is a bet that I would kind of like to make with somebody out there. If anybody's interested, can Jakob Smerts convert a pole to a win?
In 2011. that's a good question.
Yeah. I would like to see it happen.
He's been there. He's been in the lead and then crashed out. So it's not just, yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah, crash out or falling back. If somebody wants to take a bet on that, gentleman's bet, of course, or over something, you know, a six-pack or something like that, I'd be happy to take it. Following up on that would be Jonathan Ray, Eugene Laverty, Tom Sykes. Great to see the Kawi up there, and it'll be interesting to see. Now, that test, I should point out, and I think I did point out the last show, perhaps.
But it was wet, right?
It was dry, wet, wet.
Yeah, yeah.
Or dry, wet, half dry, half wet. And so we'll have to see how that goes. But we had some good guys up in front. At your bottom of the pack for World Superbike were Ayrton Badovini, Marco Melandri, and Maxime Berger. Melandri is still recovering from a shoulder operation as well. Not quite the same as the one that Rossi had to deal with. But he was actually fastest in the wet. So that'll be fun. Remember back to the infamous sliding... PI. Everybody can think of it. Peace sign coming out of the last corner and winning that race. On the World Supersport front, and I did that interview, and I knew doing that interview, with Mark Wittage, we had Sam Lowes on the top, and I knew he was going to be quick. I think the one thing that we really want to watch for this year, which should be interesting, and they have continued to progress forward, are the Kawasaki's this year with David Sloan and Brock Parks. Remember last year, Fabien Foray was on a satellite Kawasaki. This year, he is on the hands-free Tenkata Honda. And we always know that with Foray up front, things are going to be interesting. He's always an argy-bargy fan.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the same plane as Robin Arms, but we also have James Ellison on the Bogdanka PTR Honda. Gino Rail be fast. Chaz Davis switched with the Park and Go team to the Yamaha. So we don't have a top level team on the Triumphs this year, which is kind of a bummer if you think about it.
Yeah, definitely.
It was fun having the triples out there, but Chaz is basically saddled with Cal Crutchlow's winning World Supersport bike, albeit of course with modifications to bring it up to the spec that is available this year. And I think Chaz is definitely a contender for the title this year. That will be pretty fun to see how that goes. There's more testing coming up for all of those squads, obviously, official testing.
And I just want to say, go Skopek.
All right. That is the only Polish team, and full Polish team. The Bogdanka is I believe, a concrete company. Is that what it is?
If it's Polish, it's probably either concrete or coal.
Okay.
Or cabbage.
Well, there you go. the three C's, right?
Yeah.
Jules being of Polish descent. Czisek is not a name that just popped out of nowhere.
Not of Polish descent, man. I'm full Pole, man. 100%. Born and bred. Born and bred.
When did you leave Poland?
I was 10 years old.
Really?
Yep.
Say something in Polish.
Yeah. Nic nie powiem.
Did you just call me a bad name?
Maybe.
You know, we should do a Polish version of the podcast. I just hear occasionally going
motopod.pl.
Dude, we should get it. We should totally get it, shouldn't we?
Anyway,
which means now that somebody else will get it for us and try and sell it to us for $1,000. that's about it on the World Supersport, World Superbike front. Looking forward, you know, I'm a big fan. Other people may not be, but I love the racing. I love the atmosphere at those races, and I'll be at definitely at the Miller Motorsport Park race this year if I can figure out how to make that nightmare agenda go together for that in Isle of Man. I just love the atmosphere of the World Superbike races, and I have since going way back to the 90s. BSB front, we already mentioned that a bit with the movie way up above there in the podcast, but we will have a full-time ride for one Jenny Timmith, fastest lady around the Isle of Man, and maybe Rhea's going to fight with me on that, but she has signed with the Split Lath Aprilia team aboard an RSB4. She'll be the first female to compete at Superbike level in the British series. So that's pretty cool. And we'll have see how that works out. And if you think about it, that is a bit of it's a big deal, frankly. And I'd like to see the same thing happen. If you know, maybe who Lana Myers may end up running AMA Superbike at some point.
Yep.
What else we got, Jules?
Blah 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 blah. No, that's good. I think we were done. Just don't forget the contest. Those people who know the answer have already sent it in, and those people who don't are now frantically scratching their heads, going, "What?
Oh, time machine."
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to thank you for your patience in us being slacked. I did have some technical issues here on my front, as well as time issues with myself and Jules. Once again, we are the only a semi-professional podcast. We do the best we can with the time that we have. And with that, I'm going to say, have yourselves a lovely week, and we will try and get back to you as soon as possible. Hopefully Wednesday.
Cool. Take care, everyone. Ciao.